I've been thinking about the last 18 months, and I think, I don't know if anyone else has, but I thought, what a mammoth failure on our behalf that we haven't actually recorded a lot of things that have happened in this time, because it's really going to go down in history. It's quite a pivotal point in human development.
Hello, Kimberly. How are you?
I'm not bad at all. Given the circumstances, I'm actually pretty good.
You're talking about the worldwide circumstances?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, Australia and especially Victoria and Melbourne, we've been on the forefront of a lot of the severest limitations. And look, I'm sure there's other countries in terms of, you know, the basic needs, food, access to transport and other things that's been quite restricted. But if you think in terms of comparatively what we were used to, it's been a really big, really big change for a lot of Victorians and Melburnians. So I think for us, we're really feeling it because it has been such a marked change.
Yeah, we've been watching it from Adelaide and it's as if we're living in a different country. Or it has been up until now.
It has been. And I think the most frightening part about it is that there, you know, once upon a time, I think Australians and especially Victorians prided themselves on being quite accommodating and easygoing and just really jovial people to be around. But I think what I'm seeing at the moment is that, you know, that easygoingness has actually just slipped back into absolute compliance and apathy. And it's the apathy that's really hard to sit back and watch in Victoria at the moment.
Yeah, I don't understand it, really.
Look, it's a little bit cliche and you hear people talking about it quite a bit, but we haven't had the kind of civil wars, we haven't had the kind of overt political agendas that a lot of other countries around the world have had. So Victorians and Australians have never really had a really obvious reason to distrust their government or the processes that have been put in place.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Victorians who still believe that what the government's doing is altruistic and for their best interests. It's mind-boggling.
Well, as you said, you know, for really the life of Australia, we've been relaxed and carefree and not really paid attention to politics or anything like that, and we haven't really known what's been going on in the background the whole time.
We haven't, and I think it's for those of us who are questioning a lot of it. It seems to be becoming more and more obvious, the conditioning that we've had, the you know, the changes in school curriculums, the changes in health practices. A lot of us have been concerned for quite a while, and now it's blaringly obvious.
Yeah, it is.
But for a lot of people that, you know, we probably would have once assumed were quite intelligent, quite academic, quite learned, you know, a lot of them seem to be the most bought into the whole scheme. And it's really sad to see these people that we once would have considered quite intelligent people who are the biggest supporters of the narrative.
Do you think that we're just a bit lazy and we don't want to know, or we don't want to do any research because it's just all too much?
I think it's a combination of apathy, but, you know, I've watched this change. Having been a mum with an 18-year-old is my eldest at the moment, I've noticed even in the, you know, the 18 years that we've raised our two kids, that there's been this this tendency around us of people aren't actually contributing community anymore. They're not, you know, they're not having one parent in the house who's either kind of part-time working or not working at all.
Yeah.
So they can take on roles like they're reading at kindergarten at school, or they're coaching the football team, or they're coaching the netball team. There seems to be this whole mentality of parents are justifying both working and looking to be able to throw money at someone else to do it for them.
Yeah, that's right.
So while it's a really easy fix, the ultimate effect of that is that we've lost that whole incredibly rich aspect of mentorship, of community, all pitching in to help grow our kids together.
Well, maybe that's one of the perhaps the gifts of COVID, that it's going to direct us back towards that.
Do you know, we were fortunate or unfortunate enough to have our 18-year-old went through T-cell leukemia when he was quite young. Mm-hmm. And you know, I keep, whenever things get tough, I keep referring back to that situation. And we nearly lost him. He nearly died. He had a massive mediastinal mass behind his sternum. It was his thymus gland was just overrun by these cancerous cells. He had a white cell count, like a cancer load that was through the roof. It was massive. And it's like, you know, again, it sounds really cliche, but it was the worst time in our lives in a lot of ways, you know. But at the same time, in those really tough times, you develop the ability to find incredible resilience.
Mm.
And incredible ability to achieve so much.
And if, yeah, so you know, out of the worst times, you find the best times.
It is, and it's quite topical at the moment too, because in Australia, as of the 10th of January, the rollout of these COVID injections for 5 to 11-year-olds is starting to happen. And it's, you know, for a disease that 5 to 11-year-olds have approaching 100% chance of surviving, there is no risk benefit ratio to thinking about you know, a 5 to 11-year-old child having an experimental injection. And you know, it's like with our son when he was sick, nothing will motivate you to get off your ass and actually do something than the welfare of the children, or you know, the welfare of the children being threatened.
Yeah, and most people wouldn't know that the vaccine companies aren't liable for injury.
They don't understand that, you know, the vaccine companies, well, one of them in particular, you know, the trials that were done were, they weren't even worth giving credit to. You know, the number of, the sample size and the duration of follow-up after the injections were given was laughable, absolutely laughable. Mm. There were no long-term studies done on them. Mm. And again, you know, you can't even justify doing any studies like that when this is a disease that most kids, you know, well over 99% of them, again, have survived, absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Just going back to your son, for you being a nurse, was that helpful?
It was really helpful. I think, you know, in some ways a little bit of information can be a bad thing as well. Mm. I think it was a learning curve for me, because when our son went through treatment, they're put on a standardised study protocol. And I think having a little bit of health experience, I wasn't too overwhelmed. Like a lot of non-healthcare parents probably would be, you know, stepping into that hospital environment. They're very, really trusting of the practitioners that are there to help their kids. So I think as a healthcare worker, I wasn't afraid to go out and research every aspect of that study protocol, every drug that was being offered. What its side effects were, what the long-term use of it was, if there were any concerns with it. So I think from that point of view, it helped, because we actually rejected a couple of parts of treatment. I mean, that's really scary as a parent, because, you know, you're making a decision that potentially could affect your child's survival.
Yeah, that's right, and that's what people are facing at the moment. I worry that that trust you talk about is being eroded really rapidly at the moment.
It absolutely is. And the thing that really worries me, and what's motivated me to work with the incredible doctors, nurses, paramedics, the team that I'm working with in the background around Australia, is that we're determined that the parents that we can connect with actually get information. They get the ability to make an informed choice for their kids, because that's not happening.
No.
What's being pumped out on mainstream media, what's actually being put out in the newspapers, is only one side of the equation. And it's really concerning, because we have never seen this in Australia before, where the general public is not privy to the vast number of vaccine injuries that are happening. And I know these are happening, because our group of doctors and nurses nationally are constantly you know, sharing the information of how many vaccine injuries are hitting emergency departments, how many kids are, or how many people are ending up with myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart, or pericarditis, which is inflammation of the lining around the heart. It is not rare. It is very common, and it is very concerning. But parents aren't getting this information.
No. The group that you're talking about is the Australian Health Professionals.
It's a group that you've started. Yeah, it's the Australian Frontline Health Professionals. So it's okay. a group nationally of various health professional representatives. There's doctors, there's nurses, there's naturopaths, there's chiropractors, there's aged care workers, administration workers. It's a group of people that have just come together over the last probably year or so and met through Zoom.
How many people in your group?
So in our Telegram group, we've got over 1,200 members and growing. Wow. We have we actually have a database of over 260 people. On a Zoom meeting, it depends on our Zoom meeting, whether we're bringing in a guest speaker or doing an education session, or whether it's just a regular connecting update for the group. And look, we've been really grateful to have some pretty special people. Ricardo Bossi, we've had some of the Heal Me guys who are putting together an alternative way of doing health. We've had some great doctors, Catherine Fiennes, Mark Hobart. So it's been about connecting health professionals nationally who understand there's a problem and who have the courage to actually seek out others that think the same.
And are these all people that are now unemployed because of their choice?
Yeah. So part of what we did was to try and help these health professionals challenge their HR departments, because a lot of what's been going on in HR departments has been horrible. It's just been, you know, the coercion, HR departments have been trying to sack people by referring to their choice to want to refuse these injections as a performance issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think that we're the only profession at all. I think this is now at the point, I know in Victoria it's the point where most of us can't work across the board unless you're injected.
And really, if you think about health and the health professional, the people that we want are all these ones in your group that are no longer working. That makes no sense to me that the others that are keeping their jobs, and they know what... They know what they have to do. They know what's the right thing to do, but they're not doing it.
I think after speaking to a lot of our health professionals nationally, there's a very big culture of fear, and especially from the doctors group, because APRA, our national registration body, has this incredible power, whether that's just perceived or whether it's actual as well. APRA has this incredible power over being able to deregister any health practitioner who speaks out against the government policy on injections.
Mm.
So gone is the ability now for a nurse or for a doctor, for a physio, for anyone to have a discussion with a patient that does anything other than support the narrative. And APRA actually issued a statement to all its members earlier in the year saying, you will not discuss with our patients, you will not post on social media, you will not say anything that goes against the directions of the government immunisation program.
Mm. I don't know how people keep working when they're being told to do this.
So, unfortunately, there's been a lot of healthcare providers who have been coerced into taking an injection they never wanted purely to keep their job. Mm. There's a lot of us, like myself, who understand the health risk of these injections and have decided my life and my health is much more valuable than any job you could ever offer me. Mm. So if it means I have to sell my house, if it means I have to pool resources and live with a couple of other colleagues just to survive, I will do it.
Yeah. Mm. What are some of the things that are, like, the points that you would be using to not take the vaccine?
It's an experimental injection. It's not a vaccine. Mm. It does not stop you getting any form of coronavirus. It does not stop you transmitting coronavirus. It does not have long-term safety studies beyond a couple of months. It hasn't been tested on the groups that it was purported to actually try and protect. So that's the pregnant and lactating women. That's people over 70. They don't have any robust numbers of sample study sizes or long-term data to show that it's actually safe. We don't have any data on its effect on offspring. So if you're a pregnant mother and you're injected with any of these COVID injections, we don't know that that won't, in 10, 20 years' time, affect your offspring's ability to have their own children.
Yeah.
There's some concerning data about miscarriage rates, about congenital malformations, so defects and things in children from these injections. There's just so much unknown data for a disease that is showing globally to be nothing like a severe pandemic that we thought it was going to be. The risk ratio benefit is just not there.
When there's doubt, there must be choice.
Well, look, I think we've actually got to move on from these injections, because I actually see these injections as the shiny thing that everyone's being distracted by. Mm. I've heard a really divine Australian psychiatrist by the name of Robbie Brennan talking about this, is that the whole campaign to try and keep people distracted by COVID injections, should we have them, should we haven't, at the end of the day, bodily autonomy says to us that we should have a choice, end of story.
Yeah.
No further discussion, no penalty.
Yeah.
You should be able to choose. What that whole scenario is, it's actually distracting people away from the really big concern, which is control.
Mm.
The digital passports, the the facial recognition that's been trying to put forward, that whole totally trying to control humanity.
That's most Australians will say to you, that'll never happen here.
Oh. It's quite mind-boggling, isn't it? I remember saying 2 years ago to my CEO, I remember saying, they will try and mandate injections for this disease and I will not partake. I will be leaving before this happens. And I remember the CEO laughing and saying, that'll never happen.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many things I've said to people and they've laughed at me and said, that'll never happen. And it's happening rapidly in front of our eyes. Every time you say something, though, people don't believe you, but then a month later it has happened. It's pretty easy to predict the future at the moment.
Oh, look, it's, already there's talk on a lot of the alternative media platforms here in Victoria that, where are we? We're on Thursday, is it about the 6th of January?
The
5th. This is what's happening too. We're all losing track of the days too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's already talk today that as of Monday the 10th of Victoria, we will be put down into another lockdown in Victoria, just to scare a few more parents into considering that these injections for 5 to 11-year-olds may well be needed. So you're right, it's becoming predictable. There'll be another lockdown to increase fear around something else that the government wants to introduce. But there's a lot of people that still haven't cottoned on.
No. But why haven't they?
Look, I think it's multifactorial. I'm sure there's a degree of psychosis that people they are not thinking rationally. Whether that's enhanced by the inflammatory effect of these spike proteins in the injections and brain deterioration, we won't know. We won't know fully till years down the track.
Mm.
Is it buyer's remorse? Is it these people have had these injections and are now starting to understand that perhaps they weren't the best choice for them? Quite possibly. Is it, that school of fish mentality. They just want to feel like they belong and they want to be on the right side of their numbers. And the problem with that is that the government is providing them with numbers of how many are vaccinated. But we don't know for sure that that's actually true.
Yeah. Well, given the way that they're pushing them, I can't believe that it's true.
Well, the very blindingly, the very obvious thing is that if these injections were such a great thing, why are we in the horrible mess that we are at this point in time? Why is the UK, why are Israel struggling to cope with the number of people who are turning up to hospitals, who are getting so-called positive cases on a test that, you know, that the FDA has already announced is inappropriately being used? And we are still using it. It's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, have you seen the latest Joe Rogan podcast with Robert Malone?
I haven't. I've heard a lot of talk about it. I haven't seen a lot of Joe Rogan's work. I have seen a lot of Malone's work. And, yes, he's quite a switched-on scientist. I like his work.
Yeah, well, so he's been banned from Twitter. And, like,
there you go. That's a telltale sign, isn't it? He's been banned from Twitter. He's obviously putting out the truth.
Yeah. So he's the inventor of the mRNA.
Yeah.
And if he's not allowed to speak, then neither are we. And, you know, that part of it, you know, if the government's coercing me, threatening me, bullying me and sacking me, then I've got to really scratch the surface of this and have a look at it and say something's not right, as opposed to just go along with it.
You can go even beyond Robert Malone. I mean, you can look at Kerry Mullis. The inventor of the PCR test, who has vehemently said this is not supposed to be used as a diagnostic tool. You know, you can look at Mike Eden, who's one of the high executives from Pfizer, who's been speaking out very, very loudly for a long time, saying, people, please don't go. There are so many people from the inside of these organisations who are putting everything on the line to warn people about the dangers of these things, yet mainstream media is not showing anything.
Yeah, and that's the problem, because most people are looking at mainstream media and the numbers, but nobody really knows where to go to look for a true source of information.
They don't, and unfortunately, because of the censorship, especially here in Australia, it's actually as hard to find it. In America, I know that there was a courageous group of doctors very early on who were doing the bus tour around Australia. They were speaking in public halls. They were actually doing a lot of very obvious campaigning. I know there's been some people like Judy Wileyman from WA, fabulous and very, very well-read woman who knows about vaccine policy. She did a tour around Australia when that was still possible. But we don't have that because of this incredible censorship by ANPRA. And that's a really big concern in itself, because there's so many conflicts of interest of all those people on the ANPRA board. And these people are responsible for the governing of all health practitioners in Australia.
The other thing that's quite insidious and of great concern to me is the fact that we're happy with segregation. The fact that people aren't inviting or didn't invite family members to Christmas because they weren't vaccinated, and they were happily doing that.
Look, I think the really, really concerning part about that too is that I think most of us can put our hand up and say, you know, I have many, many people in my life who've been injected, and they are great people. In the past, they've been great friends that we've holidayed with. We've played football. The kids have played football together with. And if you do actually enter a discussion with them, they can actually acknowledge that the state of affairs where some of us are unable to work, they can actually understand that that's inhumane, it's not right. But the scary thing about that is when you speak to someone about a social injustice of some sort, usually you can watch their body language, you can listen to their response, and you can see a registration of the gravity of what you're telling them about how unjust something is. And you can see their shoulders sink. You can see their facial expression change. You know, they'll actually say, oh, my God, that's just so terrible. But the really different thing about what's going on at the moment is these people are actually listening to you say, I haven't been able to work and pay bills for 6 months. And instead of this normal, really strong response to social injustice, these people I'm finding are actually saying, oh, I'm sorry, would you like another cup of tea? Well, don't worry, I'll buy you a coffee. So it's kind of like empathy has been suppressed.
Yeah.
And without empathy, I think that's one of our defining human characteristics.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a lot of it going around. Well, there might be, but maybe they feel helpless. Like in the workplace, they're losing their work colleagues left, right and centre, but are they prepared to say something?
I think you're right. I think it's a lot to do with courage and it's a lot to do with moral compass. It's a lot to do with looking at the long-term picture instead of looking for a quick fix and instant relief, understanding that you actually think you're buying instant relief by taking this injection so you can actually work, but you don't understand that you are selling your freedom potentially forever.
Yeah, a friend of mine sent a picture the other day. He's, for his work, he needs to be vaccinated and he's locked in a motel because he sat on a plane near someone who tested positive. And if I was that way inclined and double vaccinated and locked into a motel, I'd be pretty angry.
Look, this is tearing families apart. I know my own household, my husband's an incredible person, he's very academic, he's in the health industry as well, and he's very frightened, he's very bored into the opposite side of this possibility to me. And you know, at the moment in Melbourne there's been a lot of so-called positive COVID cases, so I have an 18-year-old son who at the moment is struggling emotionally because of the torture that they've been subjected to. And that, you know, under recent directives, my 18-year-old son would have to sit in that room for 7 days if he came out of his room to socialise with the family in the house. You know, his father was expecting him to put a mask on to come into the...
Really?
The directives or the things that people feel like they have to do just to, in inverted commas, stay safe are quite sadistic. It's just mind... As I keep saying, it's just so mind-boggling.
Yeah, well, so many of the young people that you hear about, you talk to them, they don't want to get it, but their mates are saying you got to get it, and the mates are doing the hard work and coercing and bullying and getting young people to get vaccinated when they probably don't really want to.
They are, and it's really alarming because I know our son, because of his chemotherapy, he's had quite a high accumulative doses of a group of drugs called anthracyclines, and they're a powerful chemo agent, which is, you know, useful at the time if you go down that path or if you believe in chemotherapy. But they have a potential long-term effect on the heart tissue as well. So of course, for my son, I've always refused any of these. There's no way I want my son to have any of these COVID injections. There are known definite links with myocarditis, pericarditis, and that particular injection. So much so to the point where Medicare has allocated a specific item number to cover the frequency of billing for MRIs to investigate myocarditis, pericarditis. So I know that my son has been under the influence a lot of pressure from his friends. And the thing is, they don't know. It's normal teenage behaviour. They'll just say, come on, what are you worried about? It's just a little prick, you know, just a little injection.
Just
they have no no idea of the ramifications for kids like my son. And the worst part about all of this is he's seen a cardiologist. The cardiologist cannot write an exemption for him until he has a shot and either dies or has a severe reaction to it, like myocarditis, or if he goes and has an MRI done and the MRI shows that he has scarring on his heart from chemotherapy. And this is the overreach, the absolute overreach and criminal behaviour that, and again, that's perhaps not the best term when it hasn't been substantiated in court yet, but this is the effect that APRA and the pressure that APRA is putting on our medical practitioners to prevent them from allowing people to make an informed choice.
Mm. Yeah, my brother-in-law had Guillain-Barre.
Oh, gosh.
Like, he had total paralysis, and he tried to get, and he recovered, and he tried to get an exemption, and they wouldn't give him one.
So Guillain-Barre is a nine. It's an autoimmune. It's a disease that, you know, it's one of the potential side effects of some of these injections as well, from the inflammatory process initiated by a spike protein. Why would an intelligent person want to put another dose of something to set that off in their body? You don't actually have to be that intelligent to understand that.
And yet they are.
And they are. And the most criminal part I find about this is that a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses, a lot of healthcare workers know that, but they are not finding the courage and the moral compass to stand up and say, I will not be a part of this, even if it means I do not have a job. Thankfully, there are thousands of us who have, but we're doing it tough.
Yeah.
Our families are falling apart. We haven't been able to be paid for months and months and months, and we are just hanging in there.
I feel sorry for people that prior to this last 2 years, they had an awesome marriage, awesome relationship with their partners, and now it's the opposite.
Look, I'm finding myself in that situation now, and in some ways to have a partner in the house on the other side of the narrative, it actually forces you to try and find common ground. Okay. It actually forces you to try and understand why the hell they would be thinking and behaving the way they do. Mm. So, look, in all honesty, I still admire the person that my other half is. But, look, will we go the distance? I really don't know, because you're talking about two very important but very different paradigms of thinking. And I think we live in a society where, you know, everyone is so focused on looking like they've got life in control that often we do it to our own detriment. Well, I'm here to say that none of us are in control. We are totally out of control.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's frightening.
It is, really. It is. And this was by design. You know, and I guess it depends, you know, how far down the rabbit hole, and it's such a terrible cliche term again, you want to go. But, you know, there are, I think, a lot of people who understand fully what is going on. And a lot of it is by design.
Mm.
They wanted segregation. They wanted families to fall apart. Because when you have an absolute dilemma, it's much easier to step in and say, we will be the saviors of the world, as, you know, our a friend Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum says, let us take away all your problems, hand everything over to us. You'll own nothing, but you'll be happy.
Yeah. Agenda 2030, isn't it?
Now Agenda 2021.
Yeah, and you don't need to read very far into those booklets to discover that there's something sinister going on.
And look, it's a terrible analogy, and we've been drawing similarities for a long time, but it really has become the Jews versus the Germans. And I don't mean that out of any disrespect for, you know, what people went through in the war in the 40s, because I can only imagine how horrible it was. But it's the same segregation.
Mm.
It's the same scare tactic of, you know, unvaccinated are dirty, and they're, you know, they're they should be feared, and we need to cast them aside and suppress them. It's the same narrative. Yet people are offended when you suggest it's anything similar.
Mm. Yeah, I did a podcast with Dr. Bruce Pay, out of work doctor in Adelaide, and he said, I now know what it feels like to be a Jewish jeweller in Germany in 1944.
It absolutely is. And look, I would put my hand up and say I'm exactly the same. And a lot of the courageous doctors and nurses and people that I've been, you know, connecting with and trying to educate people with for months and months and months. I mean, we've done podcasts, we've done interviews, we've spoken out at rallies, you know, we've done so much, but it's this overreaching power of mainstream media. If we could somehow intercept mainstream and start transmitting images of some of these vaccine damaged people, of some of the families that have been torn apart, the suicide rates in our teenagers and our kids, it's so frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, and they won't show any of it.
But what I am really hopeful about, though, too, is that there are more and more of us who are starting to speak out from a place of the heart. And you can actually hear it, I think, for the first time in a long time. You know, when someone is actually speaking from a place of the heart with integrity, with a really good compass, moral compass, and with honesty, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring.
Mm. So what's the plan of your group? How are you going to affect the change?
So we've been addressing this for months. So initially, when we set up the Australian Frontline Health Professionals Group, it was another incredible dynamo by the name of Alma Bersedin and myself. Alma's a former lawyer from war-torn Yugoslavia. So she saw this coming a long time ago. She saw the corruptness in the political agenda and was quite quickly onto it. So initially when we set this up, we started off with about five people, a small group of doctors who connected just because they were concerned about what they were seeing. So week by week, we hold a Zoom meeting on a Monday night. And, you know, eventually we've collected around Australia over 200 professionals, work professionals. So we started helping other health professionals in our circle by producing legal letters for them to take to HR departments to try and stand their ground. We've held education sessions in terms of treatments that are out there that are effective for COVID, and there are a lot of them that are emerging from UK, from Europe, from America. So we disseminated important information about those things. And for example, one of them was ivermectin before the TGA banned it. So we've done a lot of education of our own team. We've done a lot of public education about other ways to stay healthy. So nutritional, naturopathic, TCM. And this has all come from members in the group just volunteering their time. A lot of us have been public speakers at information nights, at rallies. There's Catherine Fiennes, Mark Hobart, myself, you know, a beautiful GP in WA by the name of Beck Halen. There's been a lot of us that have been trying to be as vocal as we have for as long as we can.
Mm. And slowly but surely, hopefully.
The message is starting to get out. And what's really, really reassuring is that this recent mandate with the kids, young kids, is really striking a chord for a lot of people. And I'm already seeing a lot of groups emerging around Australia trying to minimise the number of our kids that are going to be injected. Unfortunately, it wasn't set up quick enough to be able to, you know, help out our 12 to 17 and 18-year-olds. Far too many of them have received these horrible experimental injections, and I'm hoping the fallout in the future is not going to be too bad. But, you know, I think that's been the turning point for a lot of people. Once they started coming after our kids, that was the end.
Yeah. I also think that not many Australians realise that if they don't have their booster, they'll revert back to the status of unvaccinated.
I don't think a lot of Australians understand that if you've had a second shot and you're not more than 2 weeks post your second shot, you're still not considered fully vaccinated either.
Mm.
And you're right, as soon as those boosters come out, if you're out of your booster deadline, you'll no longer be considered vaccinated and have the privileges that you've had.
Yeah, so you'll be out of work.
I think the other thing Australians don't, a lot of Australians, not all of them, but a lot of them don't understand is that Australia secured a number of boosters for every man, woman and child into the future. We don't even have understanding of the variants that are going to emerge from, you know, over time, yet they have these boosters in the
already.
Country.
Yeah, and the variants are different strains from the beginning anyway. So how can you have a vaccine for a different strain already?
Exactly. Exactly right. Look, I shouldn't laugh because some people don't have a very good biological understanding of what's going on, but it's so obvious, you know, for most of us.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting times in the world at the moment.
You mentioned ivermectin. You know, if you listen to the podcast I was talking about earlier, he talks at length about how that can be used in early intervention and used from home. But the other thing that's even more interesting is that these alternative medicines were pretty much banned before there was any even talk of a vaccine.
The interesting thing about medications like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil is that they've been in use for many, many years.
Mm.
So ivermectin's been around at least 40, 45 years, and it's known globally as one of the safest drugs with the fewest side effects and drug interactions that there is. So ivermectin, from the studies that I've looked at, it's got quite a few different effects on coronavirus. It's a zinc ionophore, which means that it helps transport zinc into the cells. And zinc is a very powerful antiviral, so it helps destroy the virus. It has anti-inflammatory properties. It's this incredible drug that we've had thousands, hundreds of thousands of success of people taking it. And granted, it was initially an antiparasitic, but it's been used safely. And there's plenty of studies now around the world globally about how effective it is in COVID. There's a province of 241 million people in India called Uttar Pradesh that actually used ivermectin, like a little kit that they dispensed to everyone in the area. And their COVID cases have plummeted. The numbers have just plummeted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet we've seen the emergence, and this is really frightening because it's happening now in Australia. It's happened in America and the UK, is that if you want to bring into the system an experimental drug like these injections, and I'm not going to call them vaccines because they're not vaccines, but if you want to bring an experimental medication into the market, then it can only happen if there is not a proven and effective treatment already in existence.
Mm. Therefore, that's why you ban it.
The only way remdesivir, which is an Anthony Fauci-backed intravenous medication, could be brought into Australia and used in our intensive care units, was if ivermectin was taken out of the equation. So we've had Australian doctors using ivermectin with incredible results in those vulnerable populations like the elderly, and then all of a sudden it was banned, and you can now look at a lot of the intensive care protocols, and I know I've seen some of them in Melbourne, they all contain remdesivir. So remdesivir is a drug set back by Tony Fauci, and in its infancy, it was tested in four trials, and in those four trials, within 6 months, it was pulled from the trials because of the frightening number of patients who were severely ill or dying from kidney failure and pulmonary edema. So we've ripped this well-established and fantastically effective drug, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, off the market so we can bring in this another experimental drug which is killing people.
Well, the remdesivir is quite expensive compared to the others.
It is. It's about $700 a vial.
Mm.
And ivermectin, you can get... I mean, the interesting part about ivermectin is that Merck also has monopoly on it too.
Mm.
It's quite frightening how many of these drugs, which are really helpful, are actually backed by the companies that are making these injections for us. There's a fabulous inhaled steroid, which is really good for suppressing that hyperinflammatory response in the airways that you have with strong response to COVID. And it's a steroid that is being made by one of the biggest companies that are making one of these injections, the first one to make it in Australia. The conflict of interest and the effect of Big Pharma, people, we really need to wake up, people.
Yep. I heard in the early days that Clive Palmer had bought enough hydroxychloroquine for every Australian.
I don't know if that's founded. I don't know if he did, where that went. I know my own patients, we were using Plaquenil in the fertility setting quite safely with preconception women and pregnant women.
Mm.
It was safe. We were giving doses. And this is the other criminal thing too, and I should choose my words more carefully. The other thing that's very concerning is that I know our patients in fertility were taking a Plaquenil or hydroxychloroquine dose of 100 or 200 milligrams a day. With the initial studies that were done in America to try and see if hydroxychloroquine was going to be effective against COVID, what they actually did, and look, who knows whether it was deliberate or it was a mishap, they actually gave patients a dose that was 2.4 grams or 2,400 milligrams, which is 12 times the daily dose.
Mm. So they purposely flawed the test.
Yes. So no wonder patients were reporting cardiac symptoms and other side effects, because the dose was ridiculously elevated. I mean, the dose that they were suggesting as more appropriate was 200 milligrams a couple of times a week.
Yeah.
But yeah. Not, you know, you're not going to see that on mainstream media.
Mm. So what can we do?
My Santa list would be to take over broadcasting, take over transmission, and transmit the stuff that we know is actually going on. And until that happens, we're using whatever avenue we can.
Yeah.
Social media. You know, we're organising meetings. A lot of us are speaking to small groups where we can. We're doing letterbox flyers. You know, you'll see some billboard drops. You'll see little white rose stickers, which are stickers that are designed to, you know, initiate a strong response and get people thinking.
Okay.
So we're using whatever avenue we can to try and educate people.
I read something today that was interesting that said that Australia is or was very good at the bush telegraph.
It was, but if you think about what's been done to Australians, it's been a very clever agenda, because when you lock people up in their houses, when you prevent them from socialising, when you prevent them from connecting on a trusting level with each other, and you cause polarity, then you shut down that bush telegraph very quickly.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's not just Australia. This is a global thing.
Mm. Yeah, well, you could kind of get your head around it if it was just isolated to one country. But when every world leader is saying the same thing,
it's concerning.
You don't have to look very far to say and think, this isn't right.
And I think the really frightening thing about that is if you do find yourself in a situation where you have a discussion with someone who's a COVID narrative believer, when you challenge your thinking, when they open their mouth, out of that mouth comes nothing more than Channel 9 media or Channel 9 mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no registration of thought. There's no registration of understanding that it's just parroting a narrative. Yeah. Well, and I worry most for our kids, because what are we leaving behind for them?
Yeah, that's right. I've got grandkids, and I think that when I look at them. What sort of world are we leaving for you guys?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I know for most of the people that I'm working with behind the scenes, that's all that we need to keep going. And, you know, we've had plenty of days where, you know, you think, how am I going to afford that loaf of bread for next week? Or, and this is the beautiful thing about humanity too, is that then the sharing and the generosity is also coming forward as well. So it's a world of polarities where you're seeing such incredible negativity and fear and horrific stuff going on. But, you know, I'm also seeing too the most incredible human compassion.
Mm. Yeah, I'm finding that the friendships, that they're bonding quickly and they're strong.
They are, because they're real, and they're based in a real connection, and they're based in love. They're not based in materialism.
Mm.
And that's a really interesting point too, is that I do find in general that a lot of people who have the most to lose materialistically are probably the ones who are often the most bought into the agenda, because they do have the most to lose.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for them. You know, if they've got giant mortgages and loans and all sorts of things, I feel sorry for them that's become their priority, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will see what happens, because, you know, if you don't have your health, then you have nothing. It doesn't matter what your mortgage and your house size is like. You know, if you're not here to enjoy it, it's all paid for nothing, isn't it?
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, I saw a clip today of a guy trying to buy a McDonald's in Israel.
Oh, yes, and you can't buy unless you have a vaccine passport.
Yeah, because it's all done on a touch screen. So if the answer's no, then that's as far as you get.
I think one of the biggest concerns to look out for in the very near future, or perhaps even into the next couple of years, is there's a condition which isn't really being spoken about a lot, called antibody-dependent enhancement or pathogenic priming. So we know that if you are COVID-injected, what happens is that your body becomes a SARS-CoV-2, so a very specific variant of coronavirus. Your body becomes a machine that produces antibodies specifically or in preference to this one type of coronavirus. And the challenge with that is that in the absence of these injections, our bodies are very good naturally at producing broad spectrum, so a big range of antibodies that will fight a big range of coronaviruses. So we now have a world full of people who are producing very well antibodies to this one particular virus. SARS-CoV-2 has potentially long gone, because what happens is that viruses mutate on a regular basis. That's how they sustain themselves and survive.
Mm.
So these people have become an antibody-producing manufacturing plant, or a plant that is producing antibodies to a virus that's long gone. But they are doing that at the sake of their ability to produce broad-spectrum antibodies to any other variant that comes along. So they don't have the same immune function and the same ability to protect themselves, not only against different variations of coronavirus, but some of the normally innocuous diseases like mumps, measles, meningococcal. These people are going to have compromised immunity potentially for these really mild diseases too. And we just don't know if that's going to be a massive threat from here on out.
It sounds like it could be.
It could well be. And this is what a lot of our incredible scientists, Geert Vandenbosch is an amazing man that's been doing a lot of international speaking about this. He's a vaccine developer. He's worked for Gavi. And he's someone that's come out and almost in tears said, please stop this. We can't do it because we are creating superbugs by doing this in the middle of a pandemic.
So would it be true by virtue of what you've just said that what we're seeing with the people that are supposedly catching COVID at the moment, they're more likely to be double vaccinated?
They are. And this is the really, the part that is really, really wrong is that our governments are telling us that it's a disease of the unvaccinated. And don't forget, too, we've already discussed this. The definition of what's vaccinated and what's not has changed. The goalposts have changed. If you haven't had your booster, you may be included in the numbers, if you're COVID positive, as the unvaccinated because you haven't had your booster.
Interesting.
Yet the data that's coming out of some of the countries that started their injection programs well ahead of Australia are very frightening. Very, very frightening. And I keep referring back to UK, Israel. They are struggling. Their healthcare systems are struggling. It's a nightmare.
And our health professionals aren't looking at Israel going, uh-oh.
No.
So it doesn't seem as though it's incompetence. It seems as though it's the plan.
It is getting very hard to accept that it's anything other than deliberate action.
Well,
but we've got to have faith in humanity. There are a lot of us out there who are thinking about this and challenging it. There are a lot of healthcare professionals who are actually trying to do stuff in the background. Some of us more in the forefront than the background, but we are.
Well, I think for those people, that's why, you know, so many people are holding the line because they're saying there's a lot of people out there that are working for me. I need to be strong for them.
Yep. And I think it's a time where you really need to start changing and listening for that heart speaking. You know, those people that are actually speaking from a place where they've got a good moral compass, they're altruistic, and they actually care for someone other than just themselves. They're actually thinking big picture. Because you can feel the difference when you. I think you can actually, within about 3 seconds of standing next to someone, you can actually get a sense of what space they're in, whether they are actually in the game for humanity or whether they are operating from a space of fear.
Well, I've kept you for long enough, I think. But we should.
It's been really great. Talking with you, I say I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And look, to be honest, anything that gives people the chance to access what's really going on is important. And I think we have to look at as many different avenues to do that as we can.
Yeah, well, that's right. Even if just one person listens to this and decides to start doing some research.
Yep. And I'm more than happy if anyone wants to contact me, if anyone wants some anecdotal stories or they need more information, I'm more than happy for my email address to be given out if you like.
Yep, okay.
Yep.
I know that you've got lots more to talk about and maybe we can catch up again.
Love to. It'd be great. Yeah. It was a very, very kind of healthcare science based kind of discussion tonight, but there's so much more to this. And so much more to people, thankfully, than just the health medical part of it. You know, we're also very spiritual beings, I think, too. And I think, you know, this is very much a war of what we believe in and spirituality too. So that might be a discussion for another time as well.
I look forward to that.
Beautiful.
Mm.
All right. I shall bid you good night. Thank you for the time. And more than happy if anyone's interested in catching up as well.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
No worries. Anthony, I think there's a lot of us out there at the moment, and look, I'm the same. I think, you know, how many months I've been without income, but the number of people that I've met up with that are on the same boat, and these are, you know, a lot of them are incredible humans that have achieved a lot in their lives, but we're all driven by that knowing that we're here for altruistic needs at the moment. We're here because we have to be here for each other.